You're listening to Rust Belt Running.
Running is what makes me realize that, like, I'm a human being who is worth something.
That is not a good measurement of my value as a human.
We get between 8 and 10,000 additional comments, and I read every one of them.
So you had to run Sand Run for your first. You become race director and take it out.
it's got to be old guy naked in the locker room.
I get to spend time with my friend Adam. I get to do something with my friend.
Right now, I'm not thinking much beyond what I'm going to be drinking next week at this time.
Coleslaw on a taco is not taco, it's barbecue.
And so we'll be discussing tonight with some occasional swear words from Andrew because he's upset, and that's okay.
I know him as the biggest Kid Rock fan around.
You ran that.
Oh, dear God.
You're listening to Rust Belt Running. I'm Adam Wheeler. You can find me on social media at WheelsUpInCLE. Joined, as I always am, by Andrew Hedinger. You can find him on social media at AndrewRunsALot. If you want to find the podcast on social media, you can find us at Rust Belt Running.
Before we go any further, let's take a quick break to tell you a little bit about what we do with run coaching. Adam, why don't you tell us about it?
It's personalized run coaching. It takes into account the schedule that you have to get your runs in, the goals that you have, as well as the base that you come to us with. You talk to us about what it is you want to be doing, the time that you have to do it, and we come up with a personalized plan that fits your needs, works on you towards your goals, and helps provide a bird's eye view on your training to make sure that you don't plateau, to make sure that you're doing the correct training that's appropriate for you, and to get you showing up on race day confidence that you're going to be ready to hit your race goals.
So to learn more about how we can help you hit your race goals, go to rustbeltrunning.com. There you can find out about our different levels and coaching, find out more about us as runners and coaches, or you can support the show with buying merch, a sweatshirt, a patch that you can iron on to your singlet for that race that you're running soon. Maybe you don't want people knowing that you listen to us, but regardless, support the show. But for now, sit back and enjoy the rest of this episode.
Andrew, how you doing, bud?
I just had like the best night's sleep I've had in probably years. So I'm fantastic, dude. I'm ready to rock and roll and record. I did my long run on Friday, so I got the whole weekend to have a small run in there somewhere, but
yeah.
It actually feels like a weekend. I told my wife last night as I was getting ready to go to bed, I was like, this feels like Saturday. but it was Friday. So it's good stuff. I'm looking forward to it. And by the time this episode comes out, it'll be Thursday. You'll be 40.
A lot going on Thursday. I turn 40, baseball starts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, that made me think about, and I can't believe
we're going to talk about all of that.
We are. Yeah. You know, that made me think about, and I can't believe I'm saying it's been 4 years already, but back when Thomas was on with us producing and the two of you had no idea how old I was, and you guys photoshopped my head over Wilt Chamberlain's when he did the 100 points and posted that as my age that year. So I still, honestly, what's blowing me away is that that was 4 years ago. I was younger then than you are
now. Yeah, we've been doing this
a while. We have. You know, it's funny.
It's wild.
People keep asking me, because I'm going to be turning 40, they're like, man, how do you feel about that? You're kind of freaking out a little bit. And I think back and I'm like, no, like not at all. I actually freaked out a lot when I turned 30, because when I was 30, I was teaching and I'd worked a good chunk of my 20s to become a teacher. And I was realizing that I didn't want to be a teacher anymore. And there was this sort of like, oh, shit, what am I going to do with my life sort of thing? And now here I am at 40, and I'm so much happier with what I'm doing. Like, you and I have this little run coaching business, and we don't know exactly where it's going to go, but it's a lot of fun doing what we're doing, and we've got a good vision with it, and I'm really happy with that. So I feel so much better at 40 than I did at 30, and I'm in way better shape than I was then, too. So I'm a fan.
It is wild to be in way better shape older than younger.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
I look back on where I was, you know, even taking the fact that I smoked cigarettes, mm-hmm. you know, I look back on where I was a few years ago. And dude, January, February, March were always bad for me.
Yeah.
From a running standpoint. And I think some of it is the community that I've begun running with physically, mm-hmm. In the last year. But I think there's just a lot more focus on goal. I think I'm having a lot more fun running, mm-hmm. too. I continue to like enjoy the act of running. And, but yeah, I'm looking back. I'm like, dude, I couldn't have done the workout Nate Perez and I did on Wednesday. I couldn't have done that a few years ago. I'm doing it in mm-hmm. March, and, I'm in a good spot. I'm building a foundation right now that is, that I haven't had at this time of the year ever in the almost 10 years I've been, you know, on this journey. I've never had this type of foundation in March. It's kind of weird because, you know, we have Boston in a couple of weeks and we haven't talked much about Glass City is the week beyond that. Like, it's almost like my crystal ball stops, on April 17th. I can't look past that day. And I'm not even racing. I'm just going. You know, I think part of that is this feels so much like I'm just laying mm-hmm. groundwork. Like that's all I'm doing. I'm not training for a race. I'm just laying groundwork. And it kind of started to hit me this week. I'm like, dude, you're not just laying groundwork. Like you're in really good shape. You're heading into peak time. And you're going to have an awesome race in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Like that's coming too. Like that's not just another training run on the way to Erie in Chicago. Like this is its own thing. And I need to kind of enjoy that process as well. It's just kind of gotten lost in the shuffle of Boston. And it's really snuck up on me. Because I just haven't really thought about my own race. I've been thinking about this fun travel to Boston so much, but yeah, dude, Glass City is going to be a good time too. And it's not something that I should forget. And I'm glad that I was kind of able to check myself on kind of brushing it under the rug a little bit, because I need to enjoy that process as well and make that special. Cause Glass City is special. I trained for it in 2020. Yeah. And I didn't get to do it. So, you know, this isn't full vindication of that, because this isn't going to be the full, this isn't going to be the PR, and I'm probably never going to go back there and run the full, because the only spring full I'll ever run is Boston. We've talked about that a ton. And so I'll probably never get there for something like that, but you know, the chance to go out and lay out an awesome PR in the half, like I can still give Toledo that. And I do have some reasons why I want Toledo to be special that I'll talk to when we get closer to the race. I'm really looking forward to getting up there and laying it out. So yeah, kind of glad I had those thoughts that were like, dude, don't forget about
it. Well, this. And I think that piggybacks off something that we were talking about within the last couple of podcasts. I'm not sure what it was. But I was saying how when I was younger, I used to really take a lot of downtime. Like you talking about how your springs were never all that great, like February, you know, January, February, March weren't all that great for you. I was very much the same way, because I would take a lot of time off after my fall races and just sort of try to pick up and jump right back in the race training early in the year. And it was never good because I didn't have any sort of a foundation under me. And I had said how that's really changed now. And I'm not freaking out about some of the little missteps that I've had with Boston training, because I had such a solid foundation that I no longer look at it as like, oh God, I have to have these perfect training blocks, because if I don't, there's no way I can build the fitness that I want. And you're really doing the same thing. Like we're not that far removed from when you had the very up and down January and even early February, where you really didn't feel like your fitness was overly great. And now here you are 4 weeks, 6 weeks later, and you're like, no, I'm solid. I'm fit. And it's because you have a much bigger foundation under you than you would have had 5 years ago. Right. Was I supposed to ask you?
Yeah. I mean, I'm coming off.
No, please. This is going to shift. What? This is going to shift topic. So I want you to finish your thought.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm not that far removed from, you know, a badass, fall in Columbus.
Yeah,
in October.
Exactly.
You know, that carries so well. And I, I did a good job, you know, letting my body recover in November and December. And then when I got back into it, but I just kept getting kind of derailed by sickness. And that, you know, that sucked, but I was always like ready to come back. I didn't allow myself to sit, you know, and we're going to talk about sickness a little later, because I got real hot on it this week. You know, I didn't, sometimes like when you get sick, it's easy to like fall into, you know, you might have to take 3 or 4 or 5 days off, and then it's can be hard to come back, and you kind of just, cause you got to catch up on so much else in life that you missed while you were sick. And that can make it real tough to get back to it. And before you know it, it's been 2 weeks because you keep going, one more day so I can do this, or I just need to rest, or I need to whatever. And I didn't fall into that kind of wormhole of sickness and training. It was just kind of like, all right, I'm feeling better, let's go. And, you know, so I never really lost much when I was sick. It was, and I was able to keep the habit right back. And I attribute a lot of that to the Wednesday night track group, because so much of my week is focused on that. And I think that's where so much value comes in. You know, we have our Wolfpack racing group chat, when we're going to do Eagle Up together. This is where I think so much of the accountability can come in, that you can have with people, because I can't show up to track on Wednesdays unfit, because I'm not going to do any of the workouts, and I don't want that to be the case. Like, I want to show up on Wednesdays fit. And, you know, it's the same thing with this group chat, like where we'll share screenshots of splits and stuff like that. I don't want to be the dude who shows up to Eagle Up in June for his 10 or 15 miles and, you know, cost us the race because I'm not fit. Like, I don't, cause we're going to win. Like, that's not a prediction. I'm saying we are arriving at St. Helena.
We have intentions
that day. Like, that is what we intend to win. Yes. And, you know, I can't be the guy that lets the team down. So, you know, there's so much accountability there. And I think that, you know, transitions us real quick to, you know, we started a couple weeks ago, we started this Rust Belt Running Teams. And I think that's, you know, so much of what I just talked about is part of what, you know, is an added bonus to training with your friends like this. Because with Rust Belt Running Teams, you're building, you know, a small group of up to 5 people. You're going to have the same training plan that meets your needs together. And you guys are going to be able to hold each other accountable, and you guys are going to be able to do workouts together, whether it's, you know, virtually sharing screenshots of your splits, or together on a track doing work, or whatever it may be. You guys can do that all together and hold each other accountable the same way I do with my friends, and have that accountability in that there. And, you know, that was so much of the thought behind it, was the success of what being around other people has brought me, even though I've always been so much of a solo runner and still largely am. But the success that has arrived at my front step by having people around me that hold me accountable, even if they don't realize they're doing it, that's where the whole idea for this Rust Belt Running Teams came from. So just a quick plug for that. You can go to rustbeltrunning.com and find out more, and sign up and get your team together.
What you were just talking about there, it gave me chills a little bit, because like you, I've been largely a solo runner the entire time I've been running, and you've been immersed in your track group, and I haven't. That's a change I'm going to be making this summer. But that's been something that you've been doing for a year that I haven't. So I really, outside of the Eagle Up group, I haven't had that sort of accountability yet. It took me back, though, to really kind of like a foundational experience for me, was when I was in high school. I played for one of the better small school soccer teams in the state of Ohio. And there was just this feeling amongst the players on the team about not wanting to let each other down, wanting to keep each other accountable, because we knew how good we were, and we knew the promise that we had. And you know, we showed up every day to practice wanting to make sure that we were going to be doing our jobs for each other, because we knew the opportunities that we had in front of us if we did. And it was one of the reasons that I got into coaching, was because how much I loved that sort of feeling. And you know, it's something that honestly I've probably searched for ever since, you know, trying to find it in the ways that I've coached. I haven't really found it yet in the ways that I've run. I'm starting to, and you know, when you talk about the groups that you run with, it really gets me excited to have that idea that that's something I could have in my running, because, you know, for as long as I've been doing this and for as accomplished as I am doing it, I've largely done it by myself. There haven't really been people to hold me accountable, really, outside of the conversations that you and I have. And that's usually more just around like you keeping me sane late in training when I'm like, dude, I'm really, really tired. So I think that's something that sometimes running lacks. And if you find a way to create it with your running, can make it so much more meaningful and so much more fun, because it is fun to do this stuff with other people that are invested in it with you and that want to invest in you. Yeah, so that gave me chills a little bit.
That's
because
good stuff.
Yeah.
That
gave me chills.
I love it. So Eagle Up, I want to talk about that real quick, because we haven't really we do intend to win. And we were talking about that a little bit on Wednesday. Me, Matt, and Nate, a couple Wolfpack members. And we were trying to discuss our distances, because it's 100 miles. We have eight people.
Yeah.
So we have to have four people. Well, I mean, you can do any distance you want, you know, but we're going to have some people that go over 10 miles on this 5 mile loop. And I started getting real excited about it as we were talking about it, because the environment and the atmosphere around this race is so much fun. It's just a massive party.
Yeah.
And we're going, again, going with the intent to win in an environment like that, where we're going to have a tent and you're going to have your whole team there cheering you on.
Yeah.
You know, every lap that you have and getting you pumped up to go out, like, oh, like you're going to have your own mini scream tunnel and stuff like that. Like that's going to be sick. Like it's going to have like adult cross country meet vibes.
Yeah.
Like, and that is something that I've been to Eagle Up a lot, but I've never participated in it. I've gone probably almost every year I've lived here, and just, you know, to cheer people on or support and, you know, maybe pace some laps or something. But to actually go and like race hard and, you know, have a competitive nature to it, that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Because we don't have that a lot, because because you don't know who you're competing against most of the time, unless you're in a small field race, like it was at that 5K in June last year, to raise money for the cancer my dad had, you know, where I won. Like, but I won by like 2 minutes. So it still wasn't competitive. Yeah. I could have gone out and trotted it and won. You know, to actually have that environment where it's like, we're trying to win this. Mm-hmm. That's going to be exciting. And it's going to go on for like 9 hours.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like nine. Well, I'm going to be hammered for part of it for sure. I already dibs leg two.
Just get it done and then party the rest of the day.
Get it. Yep. Matt's doing leg one.
Matt's going to get us out to the lead.
He's probably going to be one of our 15. Yeah. He's going to be one of our 15 runners or more if we need.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah. That feels like
it's hard because so many people are doing Boston or I'm doing Glass City.
Yeah.
Abe is doing Medina, which is like 2 weeks before.
That's in May.
Yeah. Maybe a week before. And it's like, Nate's mad because Nate's not racing at all and he only wanted to do 10, but we're like, dude, you might have to do 20. You're going to be the freshest out of all of us. JP's going to be coming off Hall of Fame.
Yeah. JP's fast though. He's got to do 15.
So yeah. It's going to be down to, it's going to be down to Nate and Luke. I'm not sure what Andy is racing this fall. He's like the one person who he has supplied one text to our group text chain, and it is my kids just said, hey, Dad, somebody's sending you videos of busting.
What a contribution that was, though. That's so good. Oh, man.
He said that. He saw his high note and he got out. It will last.
That's a defining moment for the group.
Nobody knows what that means.
Oh, man. No, one of the things that has me excited about Eagle Up, in the first book that he wrote, Dean Karnazes talks about this ultra marathon relay that he participated in. It's a 200-mile run in California, and the way the run is designed is your team submits its predicted finishing time because they want everybody to end at roughly the same time. But the way it works is instead of it happening like with Eagle Up, it's all in this one spot. It's a 5-mile loop. It's a point-to-point in California. So you do an 8-man team, and your team basically drives the course in a van. So like you got your one guy out on the course.
Okay.
And then everybody else is in a van. And when it's time to hand off, you know, you stop, one guy gets out, one guy gets in, and you keep going. And what's crazy about it with Dean Karnazes, he's like, yeah, like I did it by myself. Like here's these 8-man relays, and I'm doing this 200-mile race by myself. And I remember, the guy's insane. But I remember reading that years ago and just thinking like, man, that'd be so badass. Talk about a party. Just get you and 7 friends together and drive 200 miles, go run your leg, and then get in the bus and party the entire time. And this is exactly what that sounds like. Just, you know, in a compressed small space that, like you said, it's kind of like a carnival. But yeah, it's nothing that you really ever get to do because every race, like you said, is you're out there and, you know, you run point to point or whatever. And you're not really near a lot of other people in here because it's a 5-mile loop. Like it's impossible to not be around your competitors and be around the crowd, and the energy is going to be incredible. Right.
Yeah. You've not been there.
No, I've never done this.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Yeah. And it's going to be a lot of fun. It's part of the reason I really wanted us to stick with a 4-person team at first, because I was like, everybody's going to have to be around the whole day.
Yeah.
And we're probably not going to complete all our mileage at once. And there was something about that I was like, that sounds like a lot of fun, but this is going to be just as much fun.
Yeah.
And we still may not, but we'll probably, you know, figure things out. Maybe we won't all do our mileage at the same, like in the same time. It might be, maybe it'll be, I'll do better doing 2 5-mile loops. I don't know. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of fun about just being there, and, you know, a lot of people will come out that, you know, listen to us and maybe know who we are. And, you know, there'll be a lot of people there on the course too, that we know. So be a good chance to meet some people in person. So I'm really looking forward to it, and we're going to win.
That's the intent. Yeah.
It now. There's some good teams though.
There's a lot of talent.
Yeah, there's gonna be
there's a lot of talent in this area. My brother.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of college kids down here who go and do that and throw together some good times. I mean, in that, especially in that 8-person relay, there's a lot of talent that can run 10 or 15 miles very, very, very fast. So it's gonna be competitive for sure.
I was explaining to my brother the other day just how great I think the running culture is in just the Akron area, just how deep it is and how well connected it is. And I mean, I think an event like this is something that really brings that out. You get a lot of people from the area that are going to be doing it. It's a very social running area. It's going to be a really good competition.
So speaking of partying, you and I did some partying last week. We talked about this weekend for a few weeks leading up to it. You and I decided back in December. That we were going to forgo
our annual Christmas party,
our monthly dinners, which is right. We were going to forgo our monthly dinners for the quarter, and we wanted to do something bigger. So we went to see the Cleveland Cavaliers take on the Washington Wizards and obliterate them.
Yes.
And we had pretty sweet seats. and we had a lot of alcohol.
Oh God, we did. In a short amount of time.
We did Irish car bombs.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
We really compressed our drinking into about a 4-hour window. We were out before midnight by the time it was all done.
Oh yeah.
But a lot of fun was had.
I think we were asleep before midnight.
Weren't we? Were.
Like we were back at your place by like 11:30.
It was 11:30. Yeah.
We definitely got drunk.
Oh yes.
Because
drunk guy conversation.
Yes, it was the most like, just white dude drunk guy conversation you could imagine, and
yep,
talking about chicks,
yep.
And you know, just like giving you real sound advice. Adam.
It was sound advice, by the way.
Just good advice.
It was.
Okay. Yeah. Is it working out?
Well, I don't know, but it was sound advice because it needed to be done. So thanks.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We really did just have a good time. And it was, you know, you were talking about it before we got on. Like, it was just something. It was something that you needed. It was something that I needed because neither you or I really get to do this anymore, where we go out and just have a night out drinking and just kind of unwinding, letting loose. And we got to do that. We got to do that at the Cavs game. We got to enjoy a really good game. There was a guy behind us who had just turned 21. God, those two guys were absolutely smashed. We had a conversation about how much the guys who wipe the floor make. They were wrong. That was incredible. What was honestly most amazing to me is that he turns 21 on St. Patrick's Day, and they didn't start drinking till 5. And by this point, it was, what, 8:30 maybe when we started having this conversation? And they were wasted. So
what amazed me was that the dude thought that the mop guys made like $80,000 a year. Yeah. I was like, no, yeah. Like in what world? Like that would be the most sought after job in humanity. Yes. Like you get to pal around with basketball players, have the best seat in the house, work 41 days a year plus the playoffs for like 3 hours a day. Sign me the fuck up for that at 80 grand. Mm-hmm. Sign me the fuck up for that at 30, 20. I don't care. I'll side hustle that. Like, I'm like, dude, those guys make like 15 bucks an hour.
Maybe.
And they work like 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
And he had this like news article up and it started with, they can make up to this. And I'm like, no, they can't. And then he went down. And the end of the article is, but they probably only make like $12 an hour. I was like, no shit, dude. But they were so hammered. They had no idea about anything. Oh, I mean, you thought we were drunk.
Yeah.
Goodness. Those dudes were annihilated.
Yes.
And good for them.
I mean,
they really.
You turned 21 once.
They really were having a good time. Yeah.
We saw that woman sink that full court putt for 10 grand and we celebrated like a game winning shot.
Yes. Made,
so that was cool. There was a proposal.
That was intense. I was at the game in November against the Hornets where Darius Garland absolutely took over the game and he hit a game tying shot with like 6 seconds left in the first overtime. And I would compare the crowd at that to when this lady sunk that full court putt for 10 grand. Like it was the same thing. I mean, everybody was like, oh my gosh, you got to be kidding me. And it's this slow roll from one end to the other. So you're getting to watch all of it take place. And man, when you saw it go in, that arena erupted. That was fun. I think it's more fun than seeing somebody hit like a half court shot because it had this slow build.
Yeah.
It was like, I mean, it was a putt. I was going to say it's like watching a putt at the Masters go in, but it was the same thing. Just this slow build in the crowd and then just this pop. That was insane. Yeah. Marriage proposal. Yeah. That was good. That was a good night. We had good seats.
We had really good seats. I've always sat much higher up at basketball games. And man, when you sit that close, you do get a feel for just how big those guys are in a way that you don't when you're sitting higher up.
Yeah.
It was the first thing I noticed.
Yeah. We were just above the floor. So like we really got we really saw how tall these mofos are.
Yeah. So that was a good time. It was, that was just a good day in general. We got a good run in. We smashed some Chipotle. I finished my burrito before you did. You should have live streamed that like you wanted to. And mine was not rolled very well. That was a messy burrito.
You posted that and I had forgotten even about it because I didn't pay any attention to how slow you were eating, which is good because like you were eating at a reasonable pace. So I didn't think anything of it.
Like a normal person does.
Yeah. He's eating like an adult. Good job.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah, that run was good, but man, it was, we headed out. Oh. So we went out for a run before the game and I did not really want to run to begin with. And then we started going and it was like probably a 30 mile per hour head gust of wind. It was awful. And we went 2.5 out just straight against the wind. Yep. And then we were hauling nuts on the way back.
Which is crazy because that was largely uphill. Yeah. Yeah, it's
the back was uphill.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The back was uphill. There's one downhill there because you go underneath the turnpike, but it's a net uphill. Man, you know, that's one of those days where we've had such a mild winter that you can't complain about it. But then you have one of those days where it's colder and the wind comes out and it's like, shit, I don't want to be in this at all anymore because it's mid-March and I don't want to be cold like this anymore. And we haven't experienced this. I've been such a baby the last month training when it's gotten cold because we haven't really experienced anything that bad this year.
Okay. I want to talk about this weather for a second because everybody keeps telling me we've had a mild winter. I don't think the winter has been mild. I think it has just, we haven't had snow. We've had a lot more rain because we have had some warmer days when the moisture has hit.
Yeah.
But we've lived primarily in the low mid 30s.
It's been normal.
And
temperature wise,
it's just we haven't had the snow, which is a result of climate change. And you can't tell me differently. Which sucks. I mean, we should have snow. We should have had snow. But you know, so from a running perspective, we've had clearer streets, but I don't think it's been warmer. Like I don't have recollection of a bunch of days where I went out in shorts and a t-shirt and I wouldn't normally. No, I was still throwing on tights and jackets and ear warmers and hand warmers. And you know, this was just as cool as most other winters. And yeah, I fatigue of it now. Like this is where I start to really be like,
yes,
it's the end of March. April is next week. I want nice weather.
Yeah.
And we can't have it. And I've had one shirtless run so far this year. Mm-hmm. And I think I've had one t-shirt run. Other than that, it's been long sleeves or jackets. And it's like, I'm tired of it. I'm ready for nice. And it's not even in the forecast right now.
It's no, it's not. I was looking at the next 2 weeks and it's all like low. It's like mid 40s, low 50s. What it is everybody's comparing this winter to last winter, which was probably the worst winter that I can remember experiencing up here. And one, we got a ton of snow, like multiple storms that were dropping like 8, 9, 10 inches on us. And two is like, we had like a 40 day stretch where I don't think the temperatures got above 25. And there is a huge difference between 35 and 25 in terms of feel, especially when it stays consistently cold mm-hmm. that long. And so you're right. In terms of temperature, it's been more in the norm, maybe a little bit above normal because we haven't gotten the snow. But that's what's happening is people are comparing it to last year where we had just a protracted length of cold weather on top of just getting so much snow that this year feels mild. When in reality, like outside of not getting as much snow as you would expect, it's been pretty much what you would expect for winter. It's been dreary. It's been gray. It's largely been cold. We've just had more.
It's been windy.
It's been really windy this year, windier than I can really remember. Mm-hmm. And then too, you know, you're talking about like you're ready for spring and just the end of this weather. people at work that are from out of town always ask me, like, do you really like living in Cleveland? Because Cleveland's got such a bad national reputation. And I tell them truthfully that I love living in Cleveland 9 months of the year. The 3 months that I hate are January, February, and March, because I'm looking out my window right now and it's dreary. I don't think it's cold today. It's like in the high 50s, but it's windy, it's dreary, it's gray. And yeah, there's no like really nice weather in the forecast for the next 2 weeks. And you get sick of it. Like, you want to see sun, you want to feel some warmth. And yeah, like, you hit April and luckily you start to get some of it, but it's a tease. Like, the next 2 months now are a tease, and you take the little tease that you'll get, but it isn't really until you hit Memorial Day where finally things swing and you go, oh, it's going to be warm and sunny now. And what we're probably going to get is about 2 weeks of actual spring weather. And then it's going to be 85 degrees and hot for the next 5 months. And my garden will be in.
You know, kind of pivoting away from the weather, I think, you know, one thing that I've noticed a lot of recently, and, you know, this is kind of a seasonal time of year for it, is running while sick. And I've seen some people wear it almost as like a little bit of a badge of honor the last couple of weeks. You know, people with kids and I'm going to get called out for basically naming people without naming them. Somebody messaged me when I made a comment that said, just at me next time. You know, it's like you get stuff from your kids from school or daycare, seasonal allergies, seasonal colds, viruses, you know, and we're still like in the middle of a pandemic that we don't talk about, but you know, for 2 years, many of us largely did nothing. And, you know, that's kind of, I mean, we knew that this would happen. So before all the anti-COVID people say, we told you, you're going to weaken your immune system, we knew that not going out was going to make us less sick, therefore more sick when we started with normal life. We all knew that was going to happen. So don't take some victory lap around us, morons. You know, but we have largely been inactive and not around people for a few years. So yeah, now things are going to start circulating again that maybe, you know, we had some more immunity to. So I think that's part of the reason everybody seems like they've been a little more sick this year in particular. So running while sick is stupid. Don't do it. You know, I think there's a difference between, like, I had a little bit of a cough, that started Thursday night when the rain hit. And that happens a lot this time of year when we get like, when it's warm, but then we get like this cold rain, there's something that happens and I just get this like little nagging cough. But I know what it is, and it's not sickness. It's just the moisture in the air, the weather change just messes with me and gives me this cough. So I went out and ran last night, took some NyQuil so the cough wouldn't wake me up. Slept 12 hours and I'm fine. I knew I wasn't sick. There was a difference there. I think if you're running with something, you still need to be cautious because you're not always going to be right. You may be wrong. Right. Maybe you are sick, but if you're sick, you have to recover. Like, you have to let your body fight that stuff off. Too many people are going out and, you know, David Gogginsing their way through long runs, and it's stupid. It's not smart. It's not even effective from a training standpoint. You know, your body doesn't have limitless energy to recover and fight off illness.
No.
So, like, in the words of Ron Swanson, don't half-ass two things, whole-ass one thing. And you
can't, I love that I knew where you were going with that.
You can't do that if you're training while sick. So allow your body to fight off infection if you're ill. And you're going to get better sooner. Like, some of the people who came back to me are like, but I've been sick for weeks. It's like, well, no shit, because you keep running through all of it.
Yeah.
It's no wonder you're sick. And guess what? In 2 weeks, you're going to be injured because your body can't recover from the mileage you're putting on it. And you're still going to be sick and your race is going to be terrible. like it has a compounding effect. It's not like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just be sick if I keep running through it. No, you're going to get hurt. Your training stimulus is going to be non-existent. Your workouts are going to be garbage and incomplete. And you're still going to be sick through all of it. So none of this sounds like something that you should wear as a badge of honor. Let yourself get better. And take it from the dude who was sick for like all of last year. Like, I didn't run through it. Even when I knew what was going on in the back of my throat and that it was just something that was going to have to be taken care of surgically, when I would get another infection, the first 24 hours I was on antibiotics, I didn't run. Some of that was because I was afraid I was going to shit my pants. But like, most of that was, I want to let my body start taking care of this, because even though I know what the infection is, like if I don't let my body fight off strep, that can be catastrophic, you know? And I'm gonna let my body do what it has to do and focus on fighting an illness and not focus on recovering from a hobby.
I wish I could remember which running coach said it, but it's a quote that sticks with me. The body doesn't understand mileage. It understands stress. Mm-hmm. You know, so as runners, we focus so much just on the mileage that we're doing. Like, what's that day's, you know, workout? What's that day's stimulus? And really everything that we do folds into this. You know, one of my recovery tips that I posted in the last couple of weeks was about trying if you can, and we all live, this is a hobby, like you said, so we're all doing this within our other schedules, but trying to not do really hard workouts on days where you're also going to be having to do a lot of time on your feet, something stressful, because you're just compounding the stress on your body, and your body's not going to be responding to just that day's run. It's going to be responding to whatever stressful stuff you have to do. You know, so like, we're going in the summer. If you've got to throw down a 20-mile run and then you plan the rest of the day to be, you know, installing a patio in your backyard, you're beating the hell out of your body. And that's a whole lot of stress to come back from. And your body is going to be responding to all that stress, not just the running stress. And the same is true when it comes to sickness. You know, that is a stress that's on your body. And this is a really tough time of year, like you pointed out, because you got seasonal allergies that creep in. We are inside more in Northeast Ohio than we would be otherwise. And that means that we're exposed to plenty of sick people in close quarters with us. You also just have the effect of temperatures yo-yoing up and down, which can just screw with your body. We just had the time change not too long ago, which is another stress on the body. And as distance runners, it's really tough because so much of the work that we do is not just the physical work, but also trying to train ourselves through the, you know, the mental doldrums of, oh my God, I am really tired and I don't want to run today, but I know that I have to. And it's such a fine line to know, you know, where do you just need to take that moment? And so I understand the people who don't want to give into that, because we train ourselves so hard not to, you know, give into the fact that we're fatigued. And sometimes you just have to get up and get moving, even when you don't feel like it. But yeah, you've got to be good about discerning the different signals your body is giving you. And there is that difference, like you said, between just like the little nagging cough versus I've been sick for 2 weeks. I've felt fatigued. I've felt achy. That's a sign to just go, like, you might just be overtrained too.
Right.
But that's a sign to back off, because the couple of days off is going to give you a better stimulus on the back end, as opposed to if you just grind through it. You've got to be better about discerning the signals your body gives you.
And this is such a valuable conversation to have, I think, in our community anyways, because we suck at doing the right thing. Like, by and large, our community is awful at taking rest when we need it, going to physios on a regular basis, warming up, cooling down, stretching, taking adequate rest, getting adequate sleep. I mean, how many times do we have to hand? I saw another person post something this week that said, I don't have time for sleep. I have goals to chase. Bullshit. Good luck.
Yeah.
Like, we suck so badly at doing the right things. And it's like, and then we wonder why we don't get results. That's like me when I was smoking. Why can't I run faster? Because you're a fucking idiot, dude. Like, you're doing everything you shouldn't do. And you're wondering why you're not getting the results you want. Like, I'm not perfect, and I'm not going to say I'm perfect. You and I went and got hammered last week. That's not something we should do, and we don't – I mean, it was good, and from an emotional and mental capacity, that was very good because it gave me a pressure valve release for me. After a couple of very busy weeks while we were coming up with this RBR teams, and every moment of my life the few weeks before that was either working my full-time job – doing this or other side gigs. And then there was training. Like, so to get a moment, and I'm a dad with a wife, like to get a moment
it's
where
I
could just be me, there's value to that outside of, you know, the detriment I did to my body by drinking as much as we did. There was a equally positive effect. But, you know, there's so many things that we just suck so badly at. And this is another one of them that it just, and there were accounts on Instagram that I saw and I'm like, how the hell are we promoting this as a badge of honor?
Yeah.
Like, it's not good. It's wrong. It's like, and it's dangerous. Like, you can get dangerously sick, especially in the weather that we have, if you run sick. And so I just, there's irresponsibility that I see in that. And that's where I told you before, when I brought up that I wanted to talk about running while sick, I was like, I'm hot on this. And I think you can probably see it.
Oh yeah.
Like it's aggravating to me. I don't claim to be perfect. I'm not, I'm far from it, but there's just so many things like that, that I see that we promote. And maybe you and I need to do a better job of not promoting alcohol consumption as much as we do. Because I think there's some jest in it.
There is.
But maybe we still maybe need to just watch it. Just like as I'm talking about this, I feel a little bit of hypocrisy there.
So let's look at this a little bit, because it was funny. You know, you posted, I think the day after, probably when I was cooking you breakfast, you wrote on our story, like, holy hell, we got really drunk last night. And like multiple people chimed in. I got a text from my sister. She's like, oh, it looks like somebody had a little bit of fun last night. There might be some hypocrisy to it. Sure. To our credit, neither one of us had a 20-mile run planned the next day. You know, it wasn't like we did that and then decided to get up and just go and crush a hard workout. I knew I had a hard workout coming that weekend. I did it Sunday. You know, there is value to being social. You and I both needed a pressure release. You know, you talked about how you've been grinding, working your job, putting in the work for this, being a dad, training. You know, you and I had a conversation on the phone. It was on a Friday morning. I was cooking for myself because I had to get ready to go to work. And it was honestly one of the most relieving conversations that I've had with you in probably the last year or so. And it completely came spontaneously. I didn't know what you were going to say and you didn't know what I was going to say, but it was basically you talking about just like how kind of, I don't know if burned out is the right word, but just how like tired you were and how much you feel like you don't always do as much as you could be, because we are trying to get our business up and running, but also we're not at the point yet where we can cut back to where we can really focus a bit more on the business, because we're just not quite there yet. And that's fine. We're going to get there. But so in the meantime, we have to keep working our jobs full time, and we're training, and we have families, and we want to be a little social every now and then, because you have to just kind of have that little bit of relief every now and then. And it was so relieving to hear you say it, because it was everything that I've been feeling and just hadn't said. And I was like, I'm so happy that he feels the same way, because it makes me feel like less of a equal participant in all this, because it's true. It is tough. And so it's needed every now and then to do that. Even when you're in the midst of really big training, it's needed to be able to just cut back and release and do that. We don't do it all the time.
So you know, I guess, you know, in the sense that talking about recovering from illness, you know, we're kind of, that was kind of a recovery from just general life stress. And it kind of gave us that a little bit. So, but I mean, I guess I'm just saying, I know that I talk about alcohol use a lot. And so I think that's just going to be the challenge I give to myself in the midst of all of this. I don't think what we did last week in any way, shape, or form was unhealthy. I think it was good. I felt better after that than I did before. I mean, my anxiety levels were ridiculously high before that. The highest they've been in a long time. And a lot of it's just because I've been so busy and I've had no time for me. I mean, my time for me has been while I'm running, which is good, but that still is, it's a task. Even if it's something I enjoy, it's a task. And it's stress. Like you said, the body doesn't know miles, it knows stress. And, you know, it was good to have something that wasn't stress there. And, we gotta focus on that. Speaking of, go ahead. You got something else to add.
I hope it'll be a final point on this. Cause we could probably pivot here. I think we're sort of wired, you know, you talk about like people who kind of promote that grind culture, the idea of like, you know, I can't rest. I've got goals to chase. I think we're programmed to want to have that sort of this mentality fits at all times sort of idea. Where it's just like, you know, if I just keep going hard because going hard is the right thing to do at every single time, I know I'll get to where I want to be. It's so much harder to understand nuance and it's so much harder to embrace nuance. And, you know, one of the nuances of all this is that it's really good to go hard. Like being wired and going hard and chasing something is a really good thing to do if you're willing to give yourself the recovery then afterwards. And I think what happens is people are so afraid that if they swing too far the other way and they recover, then all of a sudden, well, I'm not grinding, I'm not chasing. Like I don't know if it's that they can't, I don't know if it's that their identity is wrapped up in chasing those goals. I don't know if it's that they feel like a hypocrite if they then swing back the other way. You know, you and I are huge fans of Brad Stolberg and Steve Magnus, and their big point is really that there's never a one size fits all solution to anything. You know, if you're going to grind and go hard, that's fine. But then you have to be able to step away and also relax and recover and take time. And that, you know, if you were wired to do one thing too much, you're probably going to eventually fail because it's always a balance. And that's where I said, you got to be better at reading your body's cues. Like it's a balance. You can't go hard all the time. You just can't.
The growth equation being stress plus rest equals growth. I mean,
exactly.
That's
the balance.
Irrefutable. Like you have to rest, and whether that is in rest, you know, like the 12 hours of sleep I got last night, or whether it is in, you know, a night out like we did last Friday, or whether it's in those easy mile long runs, you know, there has to be time for rest. And rest and recovery. And if there isn't yet, you're not gonna hit that growth. I mean, if you haven't picked up a book by Brad and or Steve or listened to their podcast, you need to go listen to it. So much of our inspiration and our the foundation of what we believe in comes from what those guys speak and write. And it's practical. And it's applicable to what we do. And I need to pick them back up. It's been probably a month or two since I've listened to their stuff. Usually what I'll do with them is then I'll binge it like in my work truck. I'll kind of,
same.
I tend to binge podcasts. Like I'll build up like an unlistened to, portion. There's only one podcast I listen to when they release new episodes all the time. And it's Knowledge Fight, which is my Alex Jones podcast.
But, conspiracy theories. Yep.
Yeah.
Your me time.
I listen to that. Yes. That's, I wonder why my anxiety is so high. I get to listen to what all these ding dongs talk about all the time, but,
that's why I avoid it.
But yeah. So one good way to, you know, we went to a basketball game. You know, we're going to another sporting event in April the day before Boston.
Yep.
And, we're going to go see, the Boston Red Sox play at Fenway Park, and they're going to take on our new gag favorite team, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. So I think it was January we were talking about, or was when we started talking about, we should see who they're playing the day before the Boston Marathon. And maybe we should go to Fenway. Because we did that last year in Pittsburgh, which we talked about a week or two ago. When we talked about traveling. We went to PNC Park, watched the Pirates play. And, you know, that kind of became our inspiration to go see the Red Sox at Fenway Park. Well, we saw that they were playing the Angels. And I was like, oh, my gosh, we can go see Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. Like, that's awesome. At Fenway Park, that's super cool. And then we went on this, like, I got to find the episode and I got to time it out. It had to be a solid 6 minutes of us talking about the Angels. And I caught myself like mid-sentence of a thought and was just like, why the hell are we talking so much about the Angels? And so that's why I've been posting so much about Shohei Ohtani recently. Because then the boardroom, Kevin Durant's like rich athlete, like blog, podcast, Instagram account thing, posted that on the 17th of each month, Shohei Ohtani's hometown in Japan wears Shohei Ohtani jerseys. And that kind of re-kicked off my love for the gag. I thought that was great. And it was like the next day was the 17th of March. So I was like, I know what I'm doing.
Yep.
So but we wanted to take some time. We wanted to actually talk about some baseball. Because, you know, by the day this is posted, it's opening day. So it's been a long time since we've talked about baseball. I thought about this yesterday. After the Braves won the World Series, I went on vacation, so we didn't record. And then things got crazy for me, and I think we kind of took a little bit of a break. We never really talked about the Braves winning the World Series, which is really sad to me. I never really got to, you know, celebrate that on this podcast. I'm not going to do it now retroactively, but you know, it's been that long though, since I think we've talked about baseball. Somehow, whenever we did, we would record like during or after a Braves playoff game where they got demolished.
Oh man, yeah.
I don't know how that happened. It happened 2 or 3 years in a row where the first one they got eliminated and I was pissed. I was like, fuck it, we're recording now. Like,
well,
I
and it was,
wait for this game.
And that game got out of hand. Like, you texted me at one point and the game was already out of hand and you're like, okay, and you're like, okay, if they do something this inning, we'll have to let this go. And I'm like, yeah, man, you're down like 10 runs. I don't think this is going to matter. And then they didn't do anything in that inning. Like, we're doing it now. Just get on. We're doing it now. That was a while ago because I can picture where I was.
Yeah. And
I wasn't living here at the time.
And then I think it was the year they won the World Series. We recorded and they played the Dodgers. And I think it was game 3. And just got annihilated. But we were up 2-1 after that game in the series. So that was a little different feel. That was like, all right, well, I guess we'll record early now. I don't know how we managed to do that, but we all know how that year played out. Eddie Rosario, the greatest baseball player of all time.
Cleveland.
He batted like 220 last year with like 2 home runs, but man, that NLCS he had in 21 was unfreaking believable. But yeah, we're going to talk some baseball here. Give us some predictions for the season. I haven't kept up much with sports at all. I didn't even know that March Madness started last week, which is weird for me. I don't even know. I know Gonzaga is in the Sweet 16 because you posted something about it on Instagram. I don't know anything else about sports right now. So this is going to be interesting to make some predictions. So what's going on with the Guardians this offseason? Don't go on to an Adam Wheeler length. Soft voice Adam. Is he coming back right now, or what do we got for the Guardians here? We haven't had a Cleveland Guardians soft voice Adam in a long time.
No, we don't need to this time. They upgraded the two spots they needed to upgrade. They added some power to the lineup at first base and a catcher. So no longer are we going to have a catcher who's going to be hitting like 110, which is good. And really beyond that, they're just bringing back a lot of the young guys that they had last year. It reminds me a little bit of, okay, so I don't want to project too much here, but it reminds me a little bit of the 2016 team, where there's a lot in place where if things go right and then they also are active at the trade deadline, it could be a very, mm-hmm. very, very good team. But also, like, you know how it is with sports with young guys. Not every young guy is going to progress on the same trajectory they've progressed at. So it's right. one of those where you relied on some young guys last year, like Stephen Kwan, and it's like, is Stephen Kwan going to put together the same sort of year? Is Oscar Gonzalez going to put together the same sort of year? You don't know. So I really feel good about where they're at. I see a team that if they're really going to be a true player to do something, they're going to have the sort of trade deadline that they had in 2016, where they added multiple pieces that really kind of get them over the top. Like, they'll probably have to add a starting pitcher. They might have to add a corner outfield bat. They can do it. Mm-hmm. They have, I think, the fourth best minor league system in the game. So they have the pieces to do it. It's just a matter of, are they there where they feel like they should make that move? Right. I feel good about them, though. I mean, they were a fun team last year, and I think the biggest thing when you – and I haven't really paid attention to spring training. I don't, just because you're following guys that you're never going to hear from again.
And this year's different. The vibe that I've got out of – World Baseball Classic, too. So
exactly, exactly. So the vibe that I get out of it is that, like, last year it seemed like the guys kind of embraced this whole, like, hey, we're young. We're going to almost treat this like it's a college team just coming together – having a good time together, but really trying to compete and win. And now the vibe out of it is they're doing the same thing, but they understand that there's expectations. And the idea is, we're not afraid of that. Like, we went far last year. Who's to say we can't win a couple more series and see what we can do? So they don't seem to be afraid of the expectations. They seem to still be having a lot of fun being around each other. And now you just kind of have to see how it plays out. I think Jose Ramirez might finally put together an MVP type season. Getting rid of the shift for a guy whose whole profile is contact, mm-hmm. and then having a legit power hitter behind him who can actually carry his own, like, spot in the lineup, it might make Jose an MVP. Otani's obviously going to get all sorts of love for that, and if Aaron Judge puts together another Aaron Judge type home run year, Ramirez won't get the credit he deserves, but this might be Jose Ramirez's best year, and that's exciting as hell.
I think Jose got a lot more national recognition last year than you would typically expect out of Cleveland. Because I think a lot of people really thought he was... I mean, Aaron Judge won the MVP and should have. I mean, I don't think you can look at the season yeah. he had and say, no, give it to someone else. But I think...
His Yankee hit home runs. He's going to get that love.
Oh, and he was hitting for average. Like, it's not like he was batting like 210 and doing what he did. Didn't he win the Triple Crown?
You're right. He didn't win the Triple Crown, but he was close. No, Luis Arraez was the batting champion.
Okay.
He was there. Like, it came down to the last couple of days where he was statistically capable of winning the Triple Crown. And so you're absolutely right. It was an MVP year.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And but Jose Ramirez didn't get a lot of national love. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
yeah, I agree.
It's gonna be a good year for the Guardians. You think the Braves are gonna probably be good? I want to talk about the Angels, though. That's what we really came here to talk about.
It's what you came here to talk about. Can I share really quick before we talk about this, my favorite all-time tweet about the Angels, because it's so true.
Yes.
The Angels have two of the best players in the game. Like, Mike Trout might be this generation's best player, might be the best all-around major league player since Mickey Mantle.
Hold that thought.
And they've made the... Okay.
They don't have two of the best players. They have the two best players, undeniably. Like... Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout are absolutely the two best players in Major League Baseball. And I don't accept other debate. And I'm not saying that as like part of the gag. Like, they truly are. And dude, the World Baseball Classic, the way it ended. is incredible. Man. I mean, Shohei Ohtani versus Mike Trout in a a 9-pitch at bat, like,
yeah,
and you get this like once in a lifetime player in Shohei Ohtani who can pitch the way he pitches, yes, hit the way he hits. I mean, he's a 5-tool player when he's in the outfield, and he is like a top level pitcher. Like, we haven't seen that since like the 30s, and he is incredible at both. And then you get Mike Trout, who is just an all around good guy and amazing baseball player. And yes, the best baseball player we've seen all around in decades. I mean, maybe since pre-Roy Bonds, like, can do everything. And you know, just, and doesn't, you know, man, but then the Angels do this.
They're awful. They haven't made the playoffs since Trout's rookie year.
You were supposed to read the tweet.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't pick up that that's what the gesture was. So no, but like, people who don't know that the Angels have been that bad wouldn't get the context of the tweet. So the Angels are bad. They have not made the playoffs since Mike Trout was a rookie, despite having, as Andrew said, probably the two best players in the game. And the tweet is this, because this is so true. Every time I see an Angels highlight, it's Mike Trout hit 3 home runs and raised his average to .528, while Shohei Ohtani did something that hasn't been done since Tungsten Arm O'Doyle of the 1921 Akron Groomsmen, as the Tigers defeated the Angels 8-3. And it's so true. It happens at least 10 times a year, where you look at the box score and you're like, oh, wow, those two had an incredible game, and the score 12-4. How the hell did they lose?
It's like when Kyrie Irving and LeBron James were here, you used to say you had to watch every game because you knew something crazy might happen. And that is how you feel about Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout. Albeit baseball is different. There's more downtime and stuff. But you have to watch those guys play because they play the game. And when they play the game with love, which I do think they're – the MLB, the players in the MLB now, I think, are very good at that. I think it is a lot of kids playing the game. I think there is a lot of authentic love. And I think that comes with, you know, so much of the Central American influence we have in the game today.
I agree.
But, you know, there's a bunch of kids out there playing the game that we all grew up loving. And, but you get, I don't even remember where I was going with this because I started talking about the way these guys love the game. Oh, but like, you know that something amazing could happen watching Trout and Ohtani play. But it's like if those Cavs teams were like as like winning like 20 games a season and just like not even a threat to make the playoffs. Like, wow, I could see something incredible because we have two of the best players to do what they do. But everything else is so bad that we just can't put it together. It's really wild to see it be that bad and that these guys actually want to be there and play the way they do play. Is pretty crazy to me. I gotta go pull.
It's gonna make for a really good time when we go to that game that Sunday before the race. I also think that's exactly how the game is going to go. The Red Sox are going to end up winning 12-4, and those two are going to do just something incredible, and we're going to get to live that tweet. And then we're going to laugh our asses off for living that tweet. Oh, man. I'm just happy it's baseball season. Baseball season is that weird.
So bad.
It is. It's awful. Baseball season is that season that you kind of take for granted because there's a game on almost every night. It's 6 months of just nonstop game action and you live for it. And I love having baseball on in the background. Like, Tom Hamilton for the Guardians is one of the best play-by-play announcers in the game. And I'm starting to come to terms with the fact that probably in the next 5 years, he's going to retire. And I don't know what I'm going to do when that happens, because he's been the voice of the Indians for as long as I've been listening. And, but you take it for granted because you wait so long for it. And then all of a sudden you turn around and it's July and you're like, oh shit, the season's halfway over.
Yeah.
And then the rest of summer flies by and it's gone. So it's like the perfect birthday present for me to get to listen to Tom Hamilton tonight. I hate that the Guardians open in Seattle because they play, I think, five of their first seven games are all like 9:30 starts or later. So I have to wait until 10:10 tonight. It'll be 10:10 tonight when we release this to listen to that game. But it'll be the perfect way to end my birthday.
All right, let's run down some predictions as we close this up. So, I want to.
Jeez, wherever will this go?
Well, I have picked the Braves and Cleveland to go to the World Series every year single since time I moved back. Yep. So, yep. I mean that would be considered chalk for me. So will I go chalk or will I go otherwise? We're about to find out. So let's start with the National League, Adam. Do you have predictions for division winners?
Oh man, I don't know because I don't pay attention to the National League.
Okay, well the Braves are going
to
win.
You
the
pay
East
more attention
again
to the National League. Okay,
the Braves look will win the East again. That's I'm going to predict that for sure. They've won four straight now. Dude, that's impressive.
It is. And that's a tough division. I mean, Washington's won a World Series out of that division. Philadelphia made the World Series last year out of that division. Man.
Dude, yeah, four years in a row.
Is this the year San Diego figures it out?
No.
San Diego has spent so much money, and I don't think they're ever going to figure it out.
Yeah, I don't understand that. It's a weird thing. That's a tough division too, though, because the Giants turned out to be really freaking good last year too. So, and you have the Dodgers there, who they just have like the entire American World Baseball Classic team outside of Mike Trout.
Yes,
on that roster. So. Yeah, I think in the NL West, I got to go Dodgers. I think I'm going to take the Dodgers out of the West. I'm going to give the Giants the first wild card spot too. And then the second wild card spot, I'm probably going to give to the Phillies. I think they got to come back after coming close last year. And a lot of that team is pretty much returning. Bryce Harper's out for a while though, so we'll see how that affects them early.
And they lost their first baseman.
Yeah. So they still got that Realmuto at catcher, and he's freaking ridiculous. So, and then in the Central, that whole division is kind of up for grabs. probably the Brewers. But then everybody else is just kind of middling, except the Pirates are really terrible. So I was thinking
St. Louis. They put together a run last year. That's interesting.
The Brewers.
No, I get it.
Arenado's
probably
awesome,
with
you. But
yeah,
dude, that's the dumbest trade in baseball history, by the way, what the Rockies did with him, because they gave him to the Cardinals for free. I don't understand what they did. That was bonkers.
I don't really understand Colorado in general.
I don't either.
Yeah, I'm probably with you. I think the Dodgers certainly win the West. I think Dodgers, St. Louis, Braves. The Braves are going to keep that going. I actually think San Diego and San Francisco make the wild cards. We're just going to go with the whole West. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. God, the American League.
I just think there's too much in the West. I think it's hard. It's going to be hard to see two division winners or two wild cards come out of the same division. I think, especially when you're talking about the Dodgers, who are probably going to win like 108 games. And, you know, a lot of that's going to have to come at the hands of San Francisco and San Diego. We'll see.
It's a balanced schedule now, bud.
Oh, yeah.
You no longer play more games against the teams in your division, so you're gonna see teams win divisions with a lot fewer wins because they're not gonna be feasting on their own competition anymore.
That's right.
Yeah, it's actually gonna be really interesting in general with baseball this year because you have the balanced schedule, you have the pitch clock, which is going to speed up the game and also probably tire out pitchers faster. So bullpens are going to become more important. You've got the end of the shift and you've got bigger bases. So there's going to be a lot more action. And I think with that is going to come some unpredictability. That said, good teams are still good teams. You have to have talent to win. But yeah, I think that's the one thing is those divisions where like years ago where it would have been hard for three teams to come out of a single division because of how they were beating each other up. I don't know if that's going to be the case anymore. We'll see.
Right.
Let's talk American League.
Yeah. Move to your familiar. I mean, me too. I mean, I live in this area. I root for the Guardians. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Let's start in the East.
Ah, man. I mean, Yankees. Tampa Bay always makes a run, but I don't know. The Yankees are just that team where just if the Yankees had lost Aaron Judge, like it seemed like they were about to, I think there's a case that that division's pretty wide open. But
dude,
it's tough for me to pick
against
the Yankees. Toronto is loaded, and the thing about the Yankees is the Judge finally stayed healthy, which he's not always been able to do. So if he gets hurt, like that team all of a sudden is much weaker. I'll probably say Yankees right now, but Toronto would probably be my team that can spoil it and get out of that division if the Yankees stumble.
I'm gonna take West. Toronto. They're just too loaded.
Out West, I think Seattle finally supplants Houston. Altuve's out with a thumb injury. I also hate Houston, and I feel like karma's got to get them eventually. Please. Seattle's got a good young team too. Julio,
Karma got
so
them in
good.
2021. What are you talking about?
I know, but they're still so good. Like I want Karma to
Karma over the left field wall and had that one Susan looking lady right on national TV, just realizing the series was over. Like that was freaking Karma
but
right
they also
there.
Won last year.
So what? Freaking
but they won last year. Like I need
Springer wasn't there.
I know.
Freaking dude who went to Minnesota on that stupid contract, like he wasn't there, like it wasn't the whole team. There was plenty of karma. Jorge Soler destroyed their souls that night in Houston. Oh my god, that home run, that, I got a picture of that shit. It's amazing. That was a good night.
Oh man. And then we get to the Central. Man, I feel like such a homer saying it. The White Sox are supposed to be in their contention window right now, and they probably made the single biggest upgrade they could have when they finally convinced Tony La Russa to retire. But they can't put it together. Minnesota, they needed so much pitching that they traded away the batting champion to get it. And they re-signed Correa because Correa had that whole thing where teams were afraid about his leg not being able to hold up to a contract, so they brought him back. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just can't see Minnesota. And with Cleveland, like I said earlier, they have to – certain guys have to keep playing the way that they played last year to have a shot, but they upgraded the two biggest weaknesses they had, and they have so much stuff to work with to upgrade when they need to that it just reminds me so much of the 2016 team at the start of the season, where you could tell that there were pieces coming together. You didn't believe me when you started 2016, even though I made my fame prediction on the news that they were going to be playing in October in the World Series. I got to find that video. You didn't know at the beginning of 2016 that it was going to go that way. Like if you look at the outfield that started that opening day, none of those guys was on the team at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Marlon Byrd, Colin Cowgill, and God, who was the third guy? You look at that team and go, what's
bad?
It was so bad. But the pieces are coming together and they have more pieces to make a really, really big swing if they're in it. And they should be. So Cleveland's going to win the Central. And then I think the two wild cards, Toronto for sure. And then Houston, Seattle, Houston, Toronto, Yankees, Cleveland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm taking Toronto out of the East. I'm high on them.
Yeah,
because I mean, even if they hit some injuries, there's still, I mean, there's so much depth there. And I mean, it's just mashers top to bottom. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the Braves team that won the World Series, where it's just like, no matter who you go up against, like, you have to pitch perfectly the whole way through the lineup. And that just puts so much pressure on the team. Now, how that works during the regular season is always a little different. you know, postseason, that seems to work very well because the every pitch is so high stress. But, I mean, it worked for the Braves that year. And it's worked for a lot of teams. I mean, it worked for the Yankees last year. Works for the Dodgers. I mean, the Blue Jays are right up there with all these masher teams and just top to bottom. I mean, just murderer's row. So, yeah, Blue Jays there. Central, yeah, I'm going to take the Guardians. I mean, kind of a homer pick because, I mean, you got the White Sox and Twins there who, you know, I mean, I think, and I don't know that it's a homer pick because, I mean, they're all probably equal footing. Like, you're not crazy if you pick any of them. You know, most people are probably going to take the White Sox. I don't know why I'm talking like this, but that's probably who most people are going to take. But they seem to be a team that just can't put it together. But a new manager might, you know, be the answer to that. I mean, La Russa didn't have his the players didn't want to play for him. So no. I don't know why he wasn't fired after the Tim Anderson stuff last year. I mean, he threw his players under the bus. I mean, and they were out talking shit about him. Yeah. Like how a guy keeps his job when nobody respects him. I mean, that's, you know, we talked earlier about how players are playing for the love of the game and a guy like him isn't coaching like that. Like Ryan Snitker is a perfect example. This isn't like an ageist thing where it's like, oh, Tony La Russa is old. No. And Tito's old. And Brian Snitker in Atlanta, he's old, but dude, they are coaches or players coaches. Like they are all about having fun and you know that they want their players to, you know, enjoy playing the game. And Tony La Russa is this old school like asshole, and it's like that doesn't work anymore. Like this isn't the 90s. You know, you don't have Jim Edmonds and Albert Pujols and Scott Rolen on your team anymore, these like blue collar guys. Like this isn't the game today. And so yeah, getting him out, I think that'll benefit the White Sox for sure. But I'm still going to take the Guardians in the Central. In the West, the top two players in the game are gonna make an impact. Shohei Ohtani, MVP, going to take the Angels to a division title. There is no conviction behind this pick. I'm just leaning into the gag. I'm gonna take the Angels to win the West. Shohei Ohtani wins the MVP and the Cy Young.
Oh man, let it happen. If that could happen, my lord.
I should put down a parlay on DraftKings for it right now. Like what are the odds? Can he do I'm gonna look and see. Put like $20 on Shohei Ohtani to win the MVP and the Cy Young. I wonder what that payout would be. Probably not very high, honestly. He probably has decent odds to do that and decent money on it. But
if he wins the Cy Young, like he's got to be in a good position to win the MVP because just based on what he does as a hitter alone, it's just going to get him that elevation. And if he can be the best pitcher in the game, yeah.
The only reason he wouldn't get it is because it would be like there's probably like unwritten rules with like the writers who would vote for him, you know, that would probably be the biggest thing that would hold him back from getting both awards. Yeah. If he were putting up numbers that would give him both awards.
Right.
We'd have to look back to and like archives and see if that had happened before. I'm sure there were pitchers who won the MVP based on just being amazing pitchers and being the most valuable.
I think Verlander like, did
he?
I think he did. I'll look. Finish your predictions. Yeah. I'm gonna look.
All right. And then wild card. There's no Astros this year. I'm going to say no Astros. I'm going to go White Sox and Yankees to fill out the wild cards. So the Angels are just going to murder the entire West, and you know, they're going to go in as the, we don't need to pick playoff series winners. Let's just pick our World Series and our World Series winners.
No. Do I go homer? I really want to. Oh, he did. He won the Cy. Oh, no. Yeah. Verlander won the Cy Young and the MVP in 2011 for Detroit.
Oh, okay.
Boy, 2011.
So there is precedent for it.
There is precedent for it, yeah.
That must have been a hell of a year.
Yeah, I shouldn't have closed. I should have looked.
I'm pulling it up.
I mean, I could go chalk and just say Guardians again. I think the Guardians make their moves. I think they do make the World Series. I think this is the year that I finally get to cry tears of joy at the end of a World Series. And they beat, they beat San Diego. San Diego finally figures it out, and we get a Cleveland-San Diego World Series, and they freeze their asses off in Cleveland in October. 24-5 is a pretty good year.
Yeah.
2.40 ERA.
250 strikeouts.
Jesus.
Goodness. Yeah, okay.
And 250 innings pitched. Jeez. Yeah, okay. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Oh, man.
Ooh, goodness. Here's a name. Do you remember the guy who finished second was Jacoby Ellsbury?
Yeah.
Man. That's a name I haven't heard in a while.
All right. So,
who do you like?
You got some San Diego love going on.
I think they finally figured it out. Because if not, they're going to have to tear it all down.
What's their payroll?
It's crazy because they just signed Machado to a major extension.
Let's see.
Everybody's turned off this podcast by now because we're coming up on like an hour and 20 minutes of the show.
It's fine. No, people will listen. People will absolutely listen. Holy shit, dude. They have so many dudes making so much money. I am trying to get there. So there are 2023 payroll is
251.
I got with the luxury tax, 248,291.
Okay.
So yeah, $248 million after luxury tax. So that's freaking $238 million in just payroll. Like, that's freaking crazy.
That's crazy.
Holy smokes. That's a lot of money. That's a team that spent a lot, and you don't see that work out for teams that aren't honestly, since like the 2000s, that strategy doesn't really seem to pay dividends. I mean, you even look at the Dodgers, who have that type of payroll. I mean, they have one World Series, but like
Yankees, they haven't won a World Series in 2009.
Yeah. So it's like, it's not, it doesn't work. When the Red Sox have been good, they've won before they dealt guys like Mookie Betts. they're at least like getting guy, and maybe they're adding a piece or two, but then they win, they sign all these big free agents like Chris Sale, and they suck. it's like, it's kind of crazy how that seems to work. And then they fire their coaches for getting busted for cheating. And it's just, it's wild. The other thing. It seems like the World Series that they won, they cheated.
Yeah, funny how that worked out.
Yeah. So out of the National League, no surprise, I'm going to take the Braves to get back to the World Series. I think with a healthier Ronald Acuna, he never really seemed to be himself last year after coming back from tearing his ACL in 21. I think he's going to be back. They didn't add a lot, but, I think that it's going to be a fun season. I do, especially coming off winning a division. I think last year there was some complacency in the playoffs. Like, I even felt that as a fan. I think it's always hard after you win one to have the same fire the following year. Mm-hmm. So I think that that'll be there this year. And last year in the playoffs, there was such a tough road to the playoffs because it was kind of comparable to when when Cleveland a few years ago had that winning streak. It just seemed like they ran out of gas because there was like this playoff atmosphere. It was kind of the same thing last year because it was the Braves had this crazy comeback in the division against the Mets and had to, I mean, even the last series of the year or the second to last series of the year was against the Mets. We were down one game going into that series and we came out of that series up one game because after a sweep, like it was playoff atmosphere baseball. So it's like to have that, I think just there wasn't enough juice once we met the Phillies in the NLDS. So I don't think that's going to happen this year. Get some of that positive momentum rolling again. Same type of thing as a few years ago. Find that, I mean, the work that Anthopoulos did to bring in, the three MVPs of those series at the trade deadline, being Jock Peterson, Eddie Rosario, and Jorge Soler. I trust him to bring in the same types of pieces this year where they're needed. It's probably going to be needed in the bullpen. The rotation is young and hopefully healthy. And I think the starting pitching should be really good. So especially in the playoffs. I think we'll be all right and get to the World Series. And then out of the American League, I mean, this is going to be kind of a homer pick. I'm going to take the Angels.
Jesus. You're so much more committed to this gag than I am.
I am. And at some point, it's, there has to be something to having the two best players and endless money. So they're somehow going to find something to put around those guys somewhere. I don't know. I have no reason to pick them except for the fact that I think it's funny and we're going to get to see them at Fenway Park on April 16th. So yeah. Shoei, if you're listening, Adam's going to be running the Boston Marathon the day after, when you're finished with your MVP performance against the Red Sox on April 17th, you should come out to Hereford and cheer Adam.
Come on.
As we cheer you on the day before. So Maybe see if your manager can keep you out of the game that day.
I got stuff to do.
Yeah.
Got stuff to do, Skip.
And then I'm going to take the Braves to win, which is a hard pick for me as much as I want to take the Angels. I'm going to pick with my heart and go with the Braves to beat the Angels.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, that's going to be a wrap on our baseball. We look forward to baseball and we look forward to baseball appropriate weather. As this episode gets posted, Adam, you're going to be 40. Want to wish you the happiest of birthdays.
Thanks, bud.
And, you're old as fuck now.
I'm okay with that. I, you know what? I aged up out of Eliud Kipchoge, Chipkoge. Let's try that again. I aged up out of
Eliud. Kicking in at 40.
Kipchoge's. I'm out of Eliud's age group now in the upcoming Boston Marathon. So that age group award victory is still within grasp now.
Your first Masters race.
Yeah.
It's exciting stuff.
I'm okay with it. Oh, it is.
Well, happy birthday, Adam. And, to everybody out there listening, we thank you so much, and I hope that you guys have good training cycles as we close in on April races. Be sure to go to restbeltrunning.com, check out our different coaching opportunities. If you sign up to train with us through the end of April,
even for solo training, we're going to supply you with gear for race day, whether it be a singlet or a t-shirt, depending on what you prefer to wear. We want to get you guys hooked up, ready to run your best race in style. So through the end of April, register to train with us. And when you get closer to race day, we're going to supply you with swag. So again, that's rustbeltrunning.com. And we really hope that you guys enjoy some better weather in the future. Adam, I'll talk to you next week. To everybody else, yeah, feel free to like, subscribe, review us on your favorite podcast platforms. And until next time, enjoy your miles, everybody.